Tonight, I am going to watch Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, but obviously I had to look back. I just had to look back at the first film, and so just revisit my thoughts, because I've been in this process of documenting these ideas and thoughts that are presented in these various films. And I'm obviously a big Potterhead, so I've always grown up with Harry Potter, so grown up with the books much more than the films. But the films are good, like, whatever, we can have 10,000 different podcasts about all of those things. But for now, I just wanted to get to why Fantastic Beasts, the first one. I thought when I saw it at the time, I was quite happy with it, quite satisfied with it for many reasons, because I thought it was an interesting set of characters, and I was at a place there where I was thinking of what are the qualities that make you really remember any film. And Martin Scorsese, I think, sort of has this quote somewhere where he talks about, you only remember character, you don't really remember the plot, you don't really remember exactly what happened, and you remember how all of these characters behaved. And that, I thought, was a very good insight, and that was what I was going with when I was thinking about Fantastic Beasts and why J.K. Rowling continues to obviously go back to the past and tell a story whose ending supposedly we know, but I don't think we really do. I'll get to that probably after I sort of check out what The Crimes of Grindelwald has store, and that will be another episode. But here I look back at that first film after an entire, how many years has been? I think that one came out in 2006, Fantastic Beasts 1, yes, and so part by part, character by character, let's try to think about what is really worth remembering from the first one. So the film begins in New York in 1927, where Newt Scamander, a magizoologist, travels to New York to... We don't know basically why, actually. Now that we've seen the movie, we know that he wanted to release the magic bird, the magic super bird, whatever his name was, Frank or something like that. Yes, I think Frank, the thunderbird. Okay, in Harry Potter, of course, I know each and every little thing, each and every little things of the world building elements that J.K. Rowling had created. But for this one, I'm not really close with a lot of the names of a lot of these beasts. But I, of course, know the basic ones are Niffler and the demiguys and what is a snake birdy thing, something like that. Yeah, there are all these amazing little things which all often it's gonna be really, really good for a younger audience of the age that she usually targets. And so that is, it's gonna be fantastic, and it's, I think there's gonna be a generation of sort of people where who grow up with the Fantastic Beasts film and then discover Harry Potter. That can also probably be a case. So the plot basically opens with Newt coming to New York and accidentally opens a magical case full of magical creatures, and they accidentally start a set of events which will culminate at the end of World War II. Oh my god. And then there are these amazing sisters, Queenie and Tina, and we have the lovable nomad who basically kind of sort of stole the first movie in many ways. When you look back at the reviews immediately after the film had come out, everybody loved Jacob Polowski, the character, and everybody loved the charm and the sense of otherworldliness that he brought into the world. And he was often the character, the Watson-y character, who had basically was our way into this, universe, new world, these characters. And he would ask dumb questions which would remind the audience exactly what is happening here again. So It was a device that I think Rowling is cleverly used in the first one, where this character plays that sort of part. I don't know what his larger destiny is gonna be, or even if he's gonna have a large play in the Newt Grindelwald sort of main equation, with Dumbledore also playing as a triangle. I think that is the whole idea, the theme of this entire series, of they three being sort of the three edges of that triangle symbolism that is inferred a lot in the in this particular series, which is of course the Deathly Hallows. And Deathly Hallows has in it stored, encoded a lot of Christian sort of symbolism, a lot of religious symbolism, a lot of ideas from alchemical texts and stuff. And so she's a very, very smart and like illiterate, a literate sort of literate writer, and she knows her stuff in terms of thematics, in terms of where all of these ideas are coming from. So those, when I could get into that, and when I could think about those sort of dynamics at play, and who's gonna be with who, and been trying to follow along in that sort of idea, as we Potterheads do, it has been good again to speculate, to fascinate, to theorize, like a lot of the times of the great times of when book 6 and 7 were coming out, the kind of theories which were fucking insane. They were insane, some of the theories that people used to come out with. And then what was amazing was that the book turned out to be a surprise, yet better than all of those theories, and it sort of, you know, transcended a level. And sorry for going back to Harry Potter, but in this particular film, Colin Greaves plays, no, Mr. Greaves. Oh, what is that? Corin Farrell. Colin Farrell is his name, the actor who plays Grindelwald? Sort of, I don't know, I may be messing that up, but he sort of is a part of the main plot of film one, where the basic idea is very simple. The case is open, and now they have to retrieve each of these creatures back into the case, and that is the series of progressions that the first film is going to follow. That has been the idea given to us, and that is exactly what happens. So in that sense, there are fun things, world discovery elements, which are again introduced, which kind of would make a lot of the people feel as if it's not doing anything, especially again one of those peoples who think that the Harry Potter and this kind of world is sort of the same. And there are definitely people out there, come on, there are. We sort of live in this idea, this bubble that everybody knows everything, and the film idea, the film business, I don't think works like that, where, you know, they are left to exclude a lot of that necessary exposition. They have to put in again what is what and what is where, and that is part of the self, the world discovering charm, that the skills that Rowling has of description, of having these wonderful creatures doing wonderful things that we almost have thought of, or have things, ideas at the back of our mind, and just bringing them forward. So that is the sort of skills that she has. And just a little unhinged from the real world are the ideas and the people that you've seen in the real world many times, the characters, the types represented into the wizarding world, the jazz club in New York, and ideas of the Americans using a different school, a different word for muggles, nomads, and that being a theme. And then how what the Americans think of the sort of the subtextual ideas of environmentalism, of having, you know, the so all of that is beyond the capacity of this podcast, but she gets those ideas in somewhere, and that is, I think, what my reading has been. And the amount of sort of podcasts and books and sort of lectures and writing classes and literature things which are referencing Harry Potter and its sort of significance is astounding. So I do have a lot of faith in J.K. Rowling, and I know that she would probably get to a place after the second movie, which I shall see. And I will have, of course, an episode on it as well. So why the fuck not? And I just hope that it's more. It's not sort of the second film. The expectations for the second film is like, unfortunately, we're living in a very serialized sort of landscape, and that is something that I don't enjoy in films. I don't know why. I'll try to articulate that as we go along, but I do not. I enjoy a self-contained sort of story in each of the films that I'm watching. I don't want to see a fucking episode on a large IMAX screen, you know? And so I hope that there is something real and something meaningful to come out, a sort of an arc for a character, say, completed within this film. Like, no arcs were basically completed in the first one, which is very disappointing. I thought something to do with Credence, I think, is a continuing thread. Credence is obviously not dead after the events of the first film, and what happens with him, what is the connection between him and Grindelwald and Paris? These are interesting questions, and the idea of world trotting, going to different places throughout this series, meeting Dumbledore in this the next one, and he was being referenced in the first one, so there is a little bit of tease where in the first one it wasn't quite 100% satisfying, simply because we knew there was more coming. And I think that is an interesting sort of insight that we can take. But that is my rant on fantastic beasts and where to find them.